The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
I can tell you it doesn't matter what organization that you're in. If anybody doesn't realize now that cybersecurity has become everybody's responsibility, all the way from the top of the organization to the individual workers, and including us even as citizens, that, you know, we really should have responsibilities. The simple recommendations, antivirus, don't do phishing emails, these types of things, because we're all in each other's supply chain. So, I think it's just getting across to everybody that this has gone beyond just the responsibility of the IT department, that everybody has a stake in it, from the individual government worker all the way up to the agency head, including the governor himself. And so I think this is just the first step.
Thank you for joining this edition of the Lawfare Podcast. I'm Carrie Cordero, and I'm pleased to welcome Admiral Bob Day, who is currently serving as Executive Director of the Virginia Cybersecurity Commission. Admiral Day retired from the U.S. Coast Guard after a distinguished career, with his last position as Assistant Commandant for Command, Control, Communications, Computers and Information Technology, and as the Commander of U.S. Coast Guard Cyber Command. I heard Admiral Day and several members of the Virginia Cybersecurity Commission speak a few weeks ago at a panel hosted by the Northern Virginia Technology Council, and was impressed by what I heard. So we invited Admiral Day to Brookings today to share with the Lawfare listening audience more about what the commission has been up to in the past year, to give us a sneak peek into what will be covered in the report the commission is close to releasing, and to tell us how Virginia is tackling the cybersecurity problem from all angles. So, Admiral Day, thank you for being here with us today.
Carrie, my pleasure.
So, let's set the scene for how the commission got started. Governor McAuliffe signed an executive order, first in 2014, which he then renewed in early 2015, creating this commission. And as I understand it, its membership includes both civilians outside of government, as well as members of the governor's cabinet. So if you could start off by telling us how the commission got off the ground and how you became involved.
Yeah, that's a good story, too. Governor McAuliffe, I think, was thinking about cyber very early on in his term. And this is actually how I became acquainted with him. He was inviting people from all over the cyber industry in the early parts of 2014 to brief his cabinet on issues related to cyber. I happened to be running Coast Guard Cyber Command, and we had obviously expertise in maritime critical infrastructure, which is very important to the state of Virginia because of the major ports. So this was before the commission was formed up, but it was probably on the drawing boards when I went and spoke to them. Shortly after that, the commission was announced through Executive Order 8, and just as you stated, it's comprised of a very good mix of personnel. Obviously, six cabinet members from the McAuliffe administration, and then 11 citizens, primarily with cyber expertise in the industry from Virginia. A good example, you've got Andrew Turner, the Chief Global Security Officer for Visa. Think about that job, being the cybersecurity person for Visa. All the way to some academics, Barry Horowitz, who's the Monster professor at University of Virginia. Jennifer Bisegli, the CEO of Interos, a supply chain cyber. So you have a very good mix of people The commission itself is chaired by Secretary Karen Jackson. And then the other co-chair is Richard Clark of national security fame as well as cyber fame. So I was pretty honored when they called me up shortly after I retired to ask me if I would assist in this process by being the executive director and having the ability to interact with that group as well as travel all over the state and talk about cyber was pretty interesting. And so that's how we kicked off the first meeting in May of 2014, and was when we really started to get to work and went from there.
And so am I correct to understand that the commission itself is supposed to only exist for a two-year term? Is that right?
That's the plans for now, is really targeting several areas. We'll talk about that a little bit more, but looking for some quick hits in these various different pieces. We expect to be wrapped up about June next year.
And so the commission itself has a number of working groups. I think there's five.
That's correct.
Education and workforce, infrastructure and Commonwealth network protection, public awareness and culture, economic development, and then cybercrime.
Correct.
That seems pretty ambitious. Why take on so many issues at once?
Well, we quickly realized that when you start looking at cyber, you kind of have to look at it as an ecosystem. I mean, you can pull on one thread here, and I guarantee five threads are going to move over on the other side. And you really have to look at it as a whole. And really, those five areas are kind of a synopsis of really where we have to look for some improvements, because they all impact on each other, believe it or not, as we kind of find out as we go through these things. Literally, education and workforce impacts on economic development, because you need the workforce to actually start driving economic development. Public awareness, again, trying to get out there and have the citizens, small business, medium-sized business, understand, you know, what the threat issues and how they can react to them, also creates an ecosystem piece. So that's why we kind of narrowed it into those five working groups. But what we found is they're working across working groups, because we've understand now that there's relationships, and you have to understand these interrelationships to be able to move forward. And so sometimes an initiative that one group comes up with becomes teamed up with one of the other work groups, because there's elements that fit together so nicely.
So tell us a little bit about what the last year has been like. You've been traveling all over the state, as I understand it.
We have, as part of the public awareness group. We wanted to do town halls. And there's a dual purpose of the town halls. First is to get out there and explain what the objectives of the commission are, what we're looking at, and some of the ideas that we initially have. But they also are a sounding board back to talk to the citizens, small business, and anybody who wanted to attend, to start getting their feedback in and generating additional ideas that the work groups could bring back and put inside of the commission environment. So we visited, we completed five official town halls, and literally all over the state. Do you know where Abingdon is? I mean, Abingdon is way down in the southwest, but we had a great turnout there. And, you know, having folks from in the Virginia Tech area, Norfolk State, up here in Northern Virginia. So we tried to get as to many places in the state as possible. Additionally, we did a whole bunch of other public outreach, much like the Northern Virginia Technology Council event that you went to. And say, I think in total, when you sum up between the town halls and the various different event, you know, we had direct interaction with over 2,500 citizens and small business, medium-sized businesses out there. So that was an important element, particularly for public awareness, just to get out there and see what people's concerns were.
And what's some of the feedback that you've been getting?
Well, I mean, I'll go to, it's a broad range. You know, what are you doing for economic development, you know, particularly in the Southwest where unemployment is a major issue? You know, what can we do, and where do we fit into, you know, what would cyber bring to this region, and having those discussions all the way to Norfolk State a couple weeks ago. A gentleman came up and basically addressed the panel saying, I got hit by this, this virus that took over my computer and then required I pay a ransom. You know, how am I going to get it? You know, how do I solve that? And who should I tell? And what should I do? So you can just see the overall level of awareness of the issues. And then something as simple like, if this happens to me, where would I report it to? Or who would I tell? Either in state, local government, who would I go to? And so we're drawing some information from these interactions that's saying, one of them is just the public doesn't know where to go to get the answers, even though there's hundreds of sites at the federal level and, some even at the state level. But to get them to go to one place to understand and then be able to read it and understand it of what the best practices are is certainly a challenge as well.
So I'm curious also what the response that you've received to the commission's work, not just from maybe small business owners or citizens who attend the town halls, but what's been the response from the state government agencies who are participating in the process and the state legislature in Virginia?
Well, let's start with the infrastructure working group. I mean, the Commonwealth of Virginia and the 82 agencies are part of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and varying levels of cyber maturity. I mean, any large organization, including federal, state, all the way down to your local governments, varying levels of cyber maturity, IT technology capabilities. And so first thing we did is let's take a snapshot. Let's take a look across the 82 agencies and do an independent assessment. So we created a survey to assess cyber readiness, cyber maturity across all the agencies, and that's currently being analyzed by Virginia Commonwealth University to give us the data. Some of the initial looks at that shows exactly what we expected. You know, because the agencies were somewhat independent and some of them had their own IT and their own processes, they were not necessarily where we would like to see them in terms of the ability to protect their data, their processes, and all their procedures, and they weren't even thinking about addressing them. Some of them were very, very good. In general, the main agency for the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Virginia Information Technology Agency, VITA, which runs their networks and runs their data centers, they're in pretty good shape. But when you have 82 agencies that do something to a certain extent have their own programs embedded, their own IT, you're seeing a little bit of everything. So we've realized that there's standards that we are going to have to recommend out of the commission to give the governor and the legislature saying, we believe that you need to, one, enforce this and get it out there and provide the resources necessary to bring all of the agencies up to a same standard. So that was, a quick look, and there's other pieces, particularly with infrastructure, that just for the Commonwealth itself, identity management. I mean, that's a key issue no matter what agency you go into, is how do you handle, one, internal access to data, and then the next piece is how does your citizens authenticate to two state systems, whether it's the DMV for you to renew your license, you to go in and get health insurance, all these different things. How does the citizens interact from an identity access management? And what we've, again, seen, it's all over the place. This agency has one standard, this one has. We're looking at making a recommendation to say, look, let's get the same way internally and then particularly externally, such that a citizen uses one credential to access their license, to go get a hunting and fishing license, whatever, that there's one process that they use and it's a secure process. So we're finding just no differently than any organization, be it private or public, that these issues need to be looked at and addressed. And unfortunately, in many cases, they require resources.
Well, and it sounds like sort of in hand with the idea of standardizing or having the different government agencies in the Commonwealth adhere to similar standard, it sounds like the commission is also addressing the broader issue of accountability. Who's responsible for making sure that all that happens? So can you talk a little bit about what the governor has done on the issue of holding his state agency heads accountable for improving cybersecurity practices?
Well, that was one of the first key elements that we took on and has actually been resolved, is there was a report done a couple of years ago that recommended that each of the agency heads for the Commonwealth agencies should in their job description have it listed that they are responsible for protection of the data that they hold within their agency. That didn't exist. The commission recommended, and a Senate bill was passed this year that has now incorporated that requirement for accountability for data into each of the agency head job descriptions. That's a great start because, one, now the chief information security officer can tell that state agency head, it's like, no, it's in your job responsibility to take and implement these controls that we've recommended. I'll work with you to get it done, and I'll get you on a pathway to get it done, but you're going to have to be a partner in this. Whereas sometimes probably in the past, it's like the agency had turned to the CISO of the Commonwealth, said, yeah, that's your problem, not my problem. You figure out how to fix it. So I think that that was one of the major achievements that came out of the first year of the commission, and we really appreciated the support that we got in the legislature for that.
Well, it sounds the issue of accountability, I mean, it's one that we've been running in different posts that our editors who contribute to Lawfare have been writing about in terms of the federal government and establishing accountability. I know I'm starting to see it in my practice where different organizational elements, they do what you just described in terms of, well, I don't know if that piece is my responsibility. Maybe it's the CISO's responsibility. Maybe it's the head of the organization's responsibility. Do you know if Virginia is the first state to go as far as put it into legislation that it's agency heads that are responsible for this?
I don't know that for sure, but I can tell you it doesn't matter what organization that you're in. If anybody doesn't realize now that cybersecurity has become everybody's responsibility, all the way from the top of the organization to the individual workers, and including us even as citizens, that, you know, we really should have responsibilities, you know, the simple recommendations, antivirus, don't do on phishing emails, these types of things, because we're all in each other's supply chain. So, you know, I think it's just getting across to everybody that this has gone beyond just the responsibility of the IT department, that everybody has a stake in it, from the individual government worker all the way up to the agency head, including the governor himself. And so I think this is just a first step. Then you've got to get a whole education piece that goes with it. I mean, it's great to say you're accountable, but if you haven't provided the training to those personnel, particularly the individual workers, that says this is what you're accountable for and hold them accountable for it, I mean, that's something we did at Coast Guard Cyber Command. It took some major cultural changes, is that if you violated something once, we turned you off for a day, you didn't have access to the network. You did it twice, you were off the network for a week. You did it a third time, in many cases, it was reason for termination of employment.
So let's shift gears a little bit. You mentioned a few moments ago education. Mm. And one of the things that I was struck by at the Northern Virginia Technology Council panel that your commissioners were at was the emphasis on creating a cybersecurity workforce and doing it through really getting in at the ground level at the various levels of education throughout the state, starting with K through 12, working with community colleges, working at the university level. So can you talk a little bit about how the commission is thinking about the education piece as it works, as it relates to creating a cybersecurity workforce?
Well, I go back. This, you have to go. It's a total ecosystem. If you want economic development, you need a workforce. If you need a workforce, you need to train the workforce, and you need to start and understand the entire supply chain all the way up. So, let's start with a driving factor. So today, in Virginia, for every 100 cyber jobs that are currently available, and there's plenty of them available, there are only 38 qualified candidates for that job.
Wow.
Okay. So there is a massive demand signal right now for, and they're good paying jobs. Most of them start at about $62,000 a year as a starting pay. And most of them do not require a four-year degree. They require a two-year certification program. Okay. So we're looking at this entire chain and how can we rapidly and quickly generate that additional, so we can have 100% candidates ready for those jobs that are there, that exist. Not only that, good paying jobs. And that's going to turn into additional economic development. So understanding what the chain is that we have seen is, one, attract the students at a very early age. We're still, as a nation, are having a very difficult time attracting STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics majors, to move into these curriculums such that they are prepared to enter into either a two-year program or even a four-year program that's focused on these elements of cybersecurity. So we said, let's start at the very bottom piece. And the first piece is where's the weaknesses there? And the weaknesses are is having teachers with the skill sets that understand cybersecurity and how the important courses that they can steer the kids into are important into moving into being prepared for those 2 or 4 year programs. And so this summer, this was a recommendation, we're going to bring in 8 to 12 teachers from around the state and teach them essentially how to get kids excited about these programs and to tell them what's out there. Such, you know, they got to see the future and what they need to have to get to the future in terms of the education and get them really excited in the courses that they will need. And we hope to expand that on. It's actually been done before. And then we're also bringing in some private partners. A couple of companies have said, we will help out by bringing subject matter experts to tell these teachers about the jobs and what skill sets that they specifically need for the entry-level positions in these jobs. Hopefully these teachers will go back in, talk with the other teachers within the school, and tell them, look, I've been exposed to what's necessary for our kids to be successful in secondary education in terms of post-secondary to get into these lucrative jobs that are widely available. Then the other piece is we do have some fantastic community colleges here in Northern Virginia and throughout the state who have got the certifications to teach these courses such that they're nationally recognized, which gets you into these jobs almost immediately. Northern Virginia Community College is a perfect example of it. But there's so many other community colleges throughout the state who want to get into this game and are ready to do that. There's a major hurdle for that. One of the things to get the NSA, DHS, and NIST certification to teach these courses, you have to have a cyber range that they can actually go on, do the forensics, and do all of the hands-on work that needs to be done. Somewhat of a hurdle from a financial standpoint for some of these smaller community colleges to do that. The commission's looking at and working with private industry, as well as the major four-year institutions that we have here, is what if we built a range in one location and allowed those schools to virtually access it such that they would have a certified program because they do have access to a range, can build the courseware, and then get certified by DHS and NSA as a credentialed educational institution. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one that we're looking at. And then the other piece is talking to commissioners who are in the industry who are saying, I'd love to have these two-year program kids come aboard and work for us, and not only that, in their summer times come intern for us, and then once we've got them in after do their two-year program and they're working for us, we're more than glad to take and pay for them to finish up their four-year degree if they so decide to. This is where these articulation agreements between something like a Northern Virginia Community College with their relationship with all of the big Virginia schools, be it GMU, Virginia Tech, Virginia, where if you take the certified courses, then you can move up and go into the next 2 years and finish up your bachelor's degree. We think that's another thing to attract kids. Come on in, get 2 years, go to work, get some money under your belt. Additionally, your employer is likely going to contribute to you going back and finishing up your four-year degree. This is a way to, one, build that entry-level workforce and then build the subject matter experts that you need later on down the line. So, it's again, it's a supply chain. It's a business issue. It's mm-hmm. supply chain. How do you get them interested in it, get them into it, and then make it easier for them to move their way through? Because not all kids want to go right off to a four-year school and maybe still finding out that I need to learn and figure out what I really want to do. These make great, great opportunities. And then not only that, it's statewide right. versus you having to run off to go to a four-year school to do it.
Right.
And it's cost effective.
So in terms of, and again, the theory behind that is that then you are, on a long-term basis in the Commonwealth, creating a workforce that's going to fuel this new economy. So shifting sort of to the governor's objective of building a cybersecurity economy in Virginia, one thing that I understand Virginia recently did was establish an ISO, a state-based information sharing and analysis organization. I think it's the first in the country to do so.
It was the first state to announce that we're going to form one. And so we're in the very early stages of figuring out exactly what that's going to happen there. And not so much an element of economic development, but it is a linchpin to feed all the other pieces in particular.
So what is it? What would a state-level ISO do?
Well, ISO is a relatively new concept out of DHS. Because you have the ISACs, which are generally vertical in an industry, whether it be the utilities and the electrical, chemical, multi-state ISACs. I mean, those are very vertical, generally industry-aligned information sharing and analysis organizations. An ISAO is more going to be more broad, and it's going to bring in more stakeholders, literally, with the same type of concept as an ISAC. It's a place to fuse information, both being fed from above, feed it, and then distribute it out to the participants. But I also look at that as a more important piece is to be able to have that information flow into an already predefined organization from those participants. And in the case of an ISAL Virginia, it could be a broad group of constituents from the small, mid-sized businesses that are here, the large businesses that are here, the municipalities and localities could be feeding into this as well. But it's a feed in as well, such that we can push what those entities are seeing up, get further analysis on it from the federal and other sources that are available, and then bring the analysis back down and provide early warning, best practices, all those types of things. So the nation as a whole and DHS as a whole is still in a very early stage of defining what the ISAOs are. There's going to be an oversight body that's formed that define how an ISAO is going to operate. That's still yet to be done. But we're going to move out and start the partnerships that we think that we need to have of who would be interested, who would contribute, and how we're going to form together to stand that up such that when the standards do come out of DHS, we're going to be ready to go. It'll just take the standards that they want to apply, ensure that we meet them, but already have the relationships built between the companies, between the municipalities, and be ready to go. So that's really going to be a second-year commission focus as to what do we need to do to get ready for that. I expect to have a kickoff meeting probably here in the next month or so with a real focus on that, inviting some of the key partners, which include some of the larger cyber-related businesses that are here in Virginia, and see what level of interest they have in participating. We've already got some initial indications, company like FireEye and Palo Alto, which are big in the cyber business, would be interested in participating with an ISAO.
So you mentioned when we first started talking that the commission has a report coming out soon. So this week there's a meeting in Richmond that the commission is gathering for.
Yes.
Will this be your first report?
This will be the first report. Literally, the ink is drying on it after some work on it this weekend. We will present it to the commissioners. They have it in their hands as of this morning. The work groups will meet first. They will review their sections. 11 o'clock tomorrow, the entire commission will come together, see if there are any major revisions, which I don't think, but I'm hoping that we should be able to have a voice vote tomorrow to approve the report. It'll go into the executive for one more quick look, and then hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll be able to put it up on the website, which is cybervavirginia.gov. That's where we put all of our stuff, and release it to the public. I'm sure that Governor McAuliffe will have a press release that goes with that. But our goal is in the next couple of weeks, and then we'll turn right into looking at the recommendations that are the forward-looking recommendations for 2015 to 2016, getting to work on those, probably another commission meeting in September.
So we'll obviously when it comes up, we'll post it on Lawfare too. Can you give us a little bit of an insight into what sort of the goals of the report are? What do you hope, you know, what do you hope to come out of releasing this report?
I think the report has multiple target audiences. One of them, obviously, is internal to, you know, Governor McAuliffe and his cabinet. These are recommendations from the commission to him, an independent commission, to say, we believe that these are the priorities that you need to focus on. They also become, you know, sort of a call to action for the legislature, in that a group of independent, 11 independent commissioners from various walks of life in Virginia, as well as the feedback that we've taken from constituents, is saying, we believe this is important. So it's a call to action to them. It's a call to action to the agency head saying, look, this is important. You really need to get on it. So, and it's also, you know, some insight to the public of what we think is important, and hopefully garner their support as well. So there's multiple constituents in this, and it's a working document to keep us on task as we look forward to say, look, these are the recommendations we're thinking of making, and so we need to finish these off because we've literally got 12 months left of existence. Let's get on it and get it done. So I think there's multiple stakeholders for the report, and that's the way we hope that they take it, is that primarily these are recommendations that subject matter experts are saying we believe this should be a focal point.
And what has so far, as you've spread across the state, what has the reaction of sort of state legislature been to the effort?
Well, I think they're very receptive because I think they're hearing it from their constituents as well. Matter of fact, this morning I was meeting with a delegate over in McLean, and you know, just general interest. What are you doing? And you know, why is this important? And they were diligently taking notes because I think you know they didn't realize to the extent of some of the issues that you know we've looked at and are saying are problems that the Commonwealth has to address. And you know, and people are clamoring for us to come to their district and talk to their citizens. So I think it's been very positive. I think, you know, the problem is with the budget environments, is that it's a challenge because some of the recommendations are obviously going to need to be resourced. And we try and make them scalable such that, okay, we understand things are tough right now in the Commonwealth, but could you start on this piece here? And, you know, this is not too much. And then we're looking for a lot of solutions that are really no cost. I mean, let's look at the, you know, making an agency head accountable. There was zero cost to that. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to cybercrime, just updating some of the laws that are on the books to modernize them, there's no cost to that, but it helps take and position Virginia to be able to better respond, and particularly in a cyber environment.
So one of the things that probably is a cost, and I think this was this issue was raised at the Northern Virginia Technology Council panel, was the issue of incentives for business. So if we're trying to lure cybersecurity startups and small business to come to Virginia and turn into large business, that there needs to be more financial incentives. How has the commission been thinking about that issue?
Well, we haven't really addressed that one yet because we know it's an issue. So we've been addressing the other pieces. The other pieces being, if I build a workforce here, a highly educated workforce here, that's going to be an attractive thing for people to move their businesses here or grow their businesses here because you have a readily available workforce and a knowledgeable one at that. So that's a key linchpin there. And then starting some new industries. The Economic Development Work Group has found a couple of areas that they believe Virginia is uniquely qualified or uniquely positioned to be able to take on. One of them is cybersecurity and UAVs. I mean, this is an area that really hasn't been looked at a lot, but one of the things is well, we do have a very strong workforce here and a knowledgeable one, but two, we have Wallops Island. And that's already a designated UAV test facility out there, such that we could take and partner up out there with NASA and be able to test cybersecurity in UAVs. The other piece is there's a center that we've got for advanced manufacturing. Virginia already has the CCAM, which is a center for advanced manufacturing, but embedding cybersecurity into advanced manufacturing, the machines that create the fan blades for our aircraft engines. They're all automated, and say, and they're all on the net. And if they're on the net, that means there's potential cybersecurity issues. So we believe that's another growth area. And then the last one that Barry Horowitz from UAV has been championing is, I don't know how many people have seen the 60 Minutes show about cybersecurity in your automobile. Scary. Mm-hmm. Again, we're well prepared. We actually have test tracks that are certified to be able to do work here. Barry's working with the state police, and there's a test bed going on now where we're going to assess the cybersecurity of the two models, the state police cars, in potential to build a market for embedding cybersecurity into automobiles and reselling it to Detroit. So new emerging areas, not only existing areas and bolstering that, but new emerging areas that Virginia is uniquely placed because of one, workforce, and two, physical facilities that we have to be able to take those on and try and grow some new industries in those areas.
So let's wrap up with a few thoughts. I want to get your thoughts on the issue of confidence as sort of a general theme in cybersecurity lately. With all of the data breaches, both the federal government, private sector, in the news, it seems that Americans are losing confidence both in how all of those different entities hold their information. Virginia's taken some steps to shore up its accountability in that. But how is the commission's work thinking about and addressing issues of confidence more generally, both in the private sector and in government?
Yeah, well, you've nailed it in that all of this comes back to confidence and who's responsible. And it's a shared responsibility. So specifically, through the efforts, particularly the infrastructure working group, the recommendations will be there, will give us a higher level of confidence that Virginia systems, if they implement the recommendations, will start reaching levels that we consider the reasonable person standard that you should be striving for. But that's going to take some resources and definitely an emphasis to get to that place. Because you're talking some IT systems that are extremely old, customized, and that's mean a lot of the problems that we see. Particularly, it doesn't matter whether it's in the federal, whether it's in the private sector. It's many times old IT systems that haven't been brought up to standards for years because they've been customized. And to go in and change them, one, requires a large infusion of resources, and two, requires that you change the way you do business processes. Almost every organization that calls me in my private business side, that's exactly what's happening, and it's generally a conversation between me, the CEO, and the Chief Information Security Officer, because something bad has just happened, and the CEO wants to know why. So, what I'm seeing now is now CEOs are saying, this is a problem, and I need to take action on it because it's a loss. It can result in a loss of confidence in my company, which will impact customer share. So now all of a sudden, cybersecurity and IT stuff that I've been preaching for most of my career now has elevated itself up to the board level, and the boards and the CEOs are having discussions about it. That's a good thing because as a result of that, the accountability, the confidence levels, and then particularly the response levels. It's not so much are you going to stop a cyber attack. You are not. And if anybody says that their entire organization is bulletproof, they're living in la-la land. It's not going to happen, never's going to happen, there's no way that you're ever going to. But the thing is getting to a confidence level of when you know that you've been breached within a reasonable time frame and that you actually have a response plan in your back pocket, not just responding when it happened, but you've already practiced it such that you can mitigate to the maximum amount level the damage that's done. You're going to still lose stuff, but the confidence level that you are in a position to respond to a rapid degree, that's where we need to move everybody up to. Because right now, a lot of it's just like, wow, that happened? How'd that happen? And we didn't know what happened, and we had no response plan for it. So that's the key piece.
And so should we expect that if the Commonwealth doesn't have one at a state government level already, that one of the recommendations of the report will be that the Commonwealth needs to have a incident response plan ready to go?
There is a response plan. It needs to be refined. It needs to be brought across all the agencies, and it needs to be exercised. And there is indeed a line item recommendation in the report that addresses exactly that.
All right. Well, I think we'll end there. Admiral Day, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
We'll look forward to the report coming out soon.
Me too.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.